Hi, I'm Jared Sebesta. Here's the podcast for Repurposed. Enjoy the conversation.
You know, I was so focused on me as an athlete. Like, everything I did was to better myself as an athlete. Since my injury happened, it kind of put the brakes on and made me think about the bigger picture. And what really was that aha moment was the first time that I helped a veteran get back on a snowboard with the equipment we built. And the reaction that he gave me and the excitement, that reaction really turned a new page for me.
Hey everybody, and welcome to Repurposed, a show dedicated to inspire you to live a life of purpose, intentionality, and of impact. I'm your host, Jared Sebesta of Taegis Financial Group, a retirement planning firm based in West Central Minnesota, where we teach true wealth. For more information, go to our website, taegisfinancial.com. Well, on this week's episode, I'm bringing you an interview with Monster Mike Schultz. He's a cool sport athlete. He's into snowboarding, mountain biking, snowcross, and motocross. He recently won a gold and silver medal in the 2018 Paralympic Games. That's kind of the Olympics for athletes with physical disabilities, and Mike is actually missing most of his left leg. You see, he suffered what most athletes would consider a career-ending injury in 2008 during a snowcross race. But he really didn't miss a beat. Within 3 months, get this, he was building his own prosthetic leg out of mountain bike parts. And within 5 months of his injury, he was racing motocross at the Summer X Games. Now, fast forward 10 years, he wins a gold and silver medal in 2018 at the Paralympic Games in a sport he didn't even do until after his injury. I recorded this interview at Mike's home and ranch and office in central Minnesota. It's also the home base of his company, BioDAP, which makes prosthetics for high-performance athletes. Here's my chat with Monster Mike Schultz.
Yeah, I've been a motorsports guy since I grew up, and didn't get into snowboarding until about 2010-11.
Which, by the way, was after your accident, which we'll get to, but right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the purpose for me getting into that was for development of the equipment with my company. And that's what got me to learn how to ride snowboard.
Yeah.
And fast forward to now, competing with the best of the best in the world on Team USA at the Paralympic Games in South Korea.
And you got a gold medal, not to mention.
I did, yeah. Gold and a silver medal. It's just, you take a snapshot of all that and it's like, wow.
You're on the cover. I can see sitting here behind you on your desk. You're on the box of a Frosted Flakes box. I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah, that's surreal. Walking through the grocery store and we're going through the cereal aisle and my daughter Lauren, she's like, "Hey, Dad, are you on the box?" And we look up. Yeah,
that's awesome.
Me and Tony the Tiger, we're like buds now.
Is there one specific thing that has stuck out more than the others? Was it maybe the Paralympics, or was there something else that was the top of the coolest list?
Yeah, the Paralympics is definitely on top of my highlight list for sure. I mean, the scope of it, but what really stands out for me is the amount of effort that I put into it to be there and to perform at my best when the pressure was on in front of the world and be able to deliver and bring home a gold and silver medal for Team USA. That moment of crossing the finish line was more powerful than anything I've ever accomplished in the past.
Yeah. Talk about some of the places you've traveled. You've been all over the world, not even just recently, but stretching back even before this accident, you were traveling all over the world. Rip off some of the places that you've been to.
You know, the upper United States, east to west, that's the easy one. Iceland, Sweden.
No kidding.
Canada several times, racing snowmobiles. And then the real global trips came over the last few years with the U.S. snowboard team. This year alone, we started New Zealand in August.
Yeah.
Riding snowboard in August. And then we were in Finland and Austria, Netherlands, Canada. And then South Korea. Yeah, I look back at all the different places and miles that I put on just in the last year.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Does your wife and your daughter, what's your daughter's name again?
My daughter's name is Lauren. My wife, Sarah.
Lauren and Sarah, do they get a chance to travel with you?
Occasionally. this year, my wife got to go on a couple trips. Last year, my daughter Lauren went to a couple. Those are all here in the States.
Yeah. Sarah just walked in, by the way.
Hi, honey.
Say hi. Okay. Talk about growing up in this part of Minnesota, kind of small town upbringing. Were you raised out in the country? Like, where did the racing thing start for you?
Yeah, I grew up on a hog farm. I just remember, like, basically every day of my life, I was hanging out in the shop, you know, messing around with three-wheelers and four-wheelers and go-karts. And, you know, that's where the motorsports kind of attached to me. And I started racing BMX bikes. It was my first competitive stuff when I was like 13 years old. And that rolled into dirt bikes shortly after. And, that first time I lined up behind the gate on my motocross bike, I knew I was stuck. Yeah. I was stuck in that lifestyle.
So was it mostly motocross at that time?
Yeah. When I was 15, 16, 17, raced dirt bikes in the summer. And, you know, the one thing that my family taught me right from the start was if you want something, you got to work for it. Hmm. And, going through high school, I always had a job so I could go racing on the weekend.
Right. And so this took you up and through your 20s, and now you're a professional motorsports racer. Doing very well at that point, right?
Yeah. So I started racing snowmobiles when I was 17.
Okay.
And over the next few years after that, I realized that, yeah, I really want to try and make something out of this and put all my effort into it. Turned pro in 2003. And that's when, the small sponsorship deals started to snowball into bigger ones. And, 03, 04 was my first real professional season. Kept getting better every year and was living my dream as one of the top professional snowcross racers.
So at that point, you're doing X Games, stuff like that?
Yeah, okay. Yep, X Games, and then traveling the national snowcross tour, basically, you know, the upper United States, East Coast to, you know, out to Colorado and Montana and all that.
That's awesome. So take us up to 2008 when you had this accident. Where were you in your career at that time?
You know, it was kind of a tough year the previous. So my best years were like 05, 06, 07.
Sure.
And then going into 08, it was time to make a couple changes with the race team. And so I signed with a new race team, and I was motivated to really kick her down the following season and really make some good positive changes in my performance. And yeah, new race team and a new snowmobile. I went from Polaris to Ski-Doo, which is at that point in time, it was – you know, it was a bit of a difference between the machines, and it took a while to get used to it. But yeah, after the first race weekend, I was like, yeah, you know, it was a couple top 10 finishes, but, it was definitely something we could build off of. So I was looking forward to the next race weekend, and we were in northern Michigan, Ironwood.
Gotcha.
And, that's when things went all sideways.
Yeah. Tell people about that. What happened exactly? Did you get off balance on a jump, or what happened exactly?
It was the first qualifying race of the weekend, and the race course was on the side of a ski hill, so there was some good elevation changes, and I got a horrible start and was charging mid-pack and was trying to make a pass, and I hit some holes funky, and it got me all sideways, and I got bucked off the machine and landed with all my weight on my left leg, and it wasn't a crazy get-off by any means, but it was just the way I landed.
Were you going real fast at the time?
It was the fastest part of the race course. You know, we're probably 40, 45 miles an hour or so.
Fast enough.
Yeah. And, on impact, my knee went into full extension and something had to give, and my knee hyperextended and compound fractured and basically just blew out the whole backside of my knee.
You said that you actually like kicked yourself in the face. Is that true?
That is very true. On impact, I just folded up and went tumbling off to the side, and I remember the bottom of my boot, you know, coming up and just smacking me right in the chin guard on my helmet. When I stopped moving, my foot was laying across my chest, I could see the bottom of my boot sole while I was laying there.
Oh, my goodness. Were you fully conscious at the time?
Totally. The only issue I had was my knee injury, and it was extremely painful, and, within, you know, 30 seconds or whatever, when the EMTs got EMT got over to me and zipped open my pant leg, and the sound of the gush, the blood just poured out of my pant leg. And at that point I knew this is serious.
Wow. What, I mean, did you know that it was going to be as serious as what eventually happened, or you just thought that they were going to stitch you back together and you're going to be okay? Cause I'm sure you had injuries up until this point, right?
Yeah. I knew my knee was jacked up.
Yeah.
I knew there was a major issue there, just because it was just flopping around. And, my wife, Sarah, was there at the race that weekend, thankfully, and she's a nurse. So she went into nursing mode and kept me calm and kind of, talked me through what was going on. And, it was kind of a disaster going to the first hospital. They weren't able to take care of my situation. So they wanted to airlift me, to a trauma center, but there's a snowstorm. So they couldn't airlift me. So we had to take a 2.5 hour ambulance ride from Ironwood, Michigan. Across over to Duluth.
How was that?
It was horrible.
Awful. Yeah.
Because of the amount of blood I lost, I wasn't able to take any pain meds. I just had to grit and bear it.
Every bump, I'm sure, was rough.
Yeah, it was nasty.
Wow, okay. So you spent a couple of days in the hospital. They tried to save your leg, but ultimately came to the conclusion that it had to go, right?
Yeah, they did what they could. You know, they did a few surgeries the first couple of days and trying to piece it back together. And there was a couple major issues. One was being the nerve was severed, and the other was the popliteal artery was severed as well. And the main complication was that they couldn't get blood circulation down into my lower leg. And because of that, the tissue started to die and my kidneys shut down. And I got extremely sick, almost to the point where I wasn't going to make it.
Wow.
And that's the point where they woke me up and said, we got a decision to make here.
Was it a no-brainer?
After the doctors explained to us the severity of it, it was like, this sucks, but I want to keep moving forward. My life isn't worth my leg.
Did you feel like you have to give up your life and your racing career at this point, or were you not even there in your mind yet?
It was kind of flashing in and out. But at that point it was survival mode.
Yeah.
A few days later is when those thoughts started coming in, but instantly it was like, I know this is going to be a life changer.
Yeah. And I know that you didn't spend a lot of time moping around. It sounded like you got back on your feet, no pun intended, pretty quickly and wanted to, just get after it and get back to, life as usual, so to speak, right?
That's part of how I dealt with the situation was I tried to keep busy. I was back on my snowmobile a few weeks after I got home.
Oh, really?
Just for fun, just to get out of the house before I even had my prosthesis. And then I worked for my race team that I had been employed for. I worked as a coach for the rest of that season and got to get on the snowmobile a little bit here and there. And
what did people say to you? Did they know what to say? Were they just kind of like, hey, Mike, was it kind of like weird where people just didn't know how to handle this type of injury?
A little bit, yeah. Okay. You know how it is when somebody has a life-changing event.
You don't know what to say.
Yeah, you don't know what to say. Huh. I tried to keep it lighthearted as much as I could and make it comfortable for people to talk about.
The first prosthesis? Prosthesis. The first one you tried on, you didn't like it.
It was basic.
Okay.
It got me walking.
Right.
Kind of. Point A to B. And, I'd trip fairly often and fall to the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah, it worked.
Kind of. Simply.
Yeah.
So in your mind, it was like, well, I'm just going to make something better.
Yeah, I'm a garage guy. I'm a problem solver. I because of my experience working on race equipment and suspension components with all the motocross and snowcross, and having tons of jobs in the fabrication, metal fabrication industry, I'm like, I think I can come up with something that's going to allow me to get back on my dirt bike and snowmobile.
So about 2 months after this accident. You're in the shop taking apart pieces of mountain bikes, right?
Yeah, it was. So my injury happened in December,
okay. And
then in March is when I made the decision to I'm gonna build something. So it was a pretty quick turnaround. And what motivated me really quickly was finding out about Summer X Games Adaptive Supercross,
okay. So
motocross racing for amputees.
Yeah, what was the process like of trying to figure it out? Did it come quickly, or did you know you were onto something right away, or how did that work?
So I looked at the must haves. The must haves is the range of motion I need. I wanted to develop it around a Fox mountain bike shock, simply because of the adjustability and the air pressures and the hydraulic dampening, and then the space available. And so with those three pieces of information, I started drawn pictures and designs, and I worked on it for about 4 or 5 weeks on the drawings. And then once I had the geometry right, you know, I had my cardboard cutouts. I didn't know how to really work CAD programs or software at that time. I still don't really know how to use it a whole lot. But yeah, pencil, paper, and cardboard cutouts, and had the geometry right. And then I went to the shop and started cutting. And the cool thing about it was, is I didn't, I've never used a mill and a lathe until this project. Very familiar with the metal shop, you know, the cutting, welding, and that type of thing. But yeah, the actual machining, I learned how to run a mill and a lathe with this very first project. And my friends at Fox up in Brainerd area, they're like, hey, come on in. We got some tools. We'll teach you how to use them on this project.
And what you call it, the first prototype, the Bio-Knee, or what did you call it?
Moto-Knee.
Moto-Knee.
Yeah, because I built it for motocross.
Okay, gotcha.
And it stuck. I still call it that.
Right. And you got, I saw you kind of have different prototypes through the years of just, you know, just right in the room right next to us. You know, where, how long did it take you to kind of perfect that to where you actually had something where you got on a snowboard and was like, this, I've got something here that's really pretty sweet.
Well, the first one, it was so cool because then it took me a week in the shop to build all the parts for it. And then finally built that last part and assembled it. And my hands were like shaking. I was so excited. And I put it on and hobbled over to my motocross bike and went for a ride, and instantly I knew that, this is going to work. And so I actually used that first prototype up until the X Games, which was 7 months after my injury. So I did a couple races on that first prototype.
7 months after your injury?
Yeah.
So 7 months after you lose a leg, you're already back.
Yeah, at a high level. Yeah, wow. it was crazy because 5 months after my injury was my first motocross race, and that was a qualifier for the Summer X Games.
Most people are still trying to deal with the trauma of losing a leg at that point.
Yeah. I guess this is part of how I dealt with it. This is what kept my mind in a positive direction. Wow. And yeah,
that's crazy.
I want to go race motocross again.
So now you have a business called BioDapt.
Yeah.
Right. So how did it go from making this something in your shop for you to then, like, now all of a sudden I'm going to build prosthetics for other folks?
That first summer in 2009, when I went to the first qualifier for the motocross race, there was a couple other sports set up, and it was all for adaptive athletes. And at that moment, I got to meet other amputees and see what their equipment was that they were using for their sport activities. And most of them are using their everyday equipment for it. And I'm like, wow, there's a big gap in equipment here. And over the next few months, I realized, like, since I'm not going to be an athlete anymore as a profession, I'm going to have to figure out plan B. And I'm like, well, maybe I could turn this into a business. And over the next 2 years or so is when I, the following year, actually, I started BioDapt in 2010. And my goal was to create some really high performance lower limb prosthetic equipment.
So you got orders coming in from, from all over at least the country. We talked about this before we started recording. You've got at least a couple of projects a month or even a week. Are you saying that you're trying to pump out of here? You know, and these are all custom pieces for people who are, missing parts of legs that want to stay active, right?
Exactly. It's you know, on average, if you average it all out, it's a couple a week that we send out, whether it's the VersaFoot is the most common component that we sell. And then the Moto-Knee is the other one.
Yeah.
And cool. It's pretty
awesome.
You make
the majority of the stuff here. You piece it together. You subcontract out some of the stuff, some of the manufactured stuff. But just in your shop back here, you're piecing some of the stuff together and shipping it off, and people are using it. That's awesome.
Exactly. Yeah. I use a machine shop out of Plymouth, and then, they send it here. I assemble it and ship it out and communicate with our clients, right through here. I talk to all of them.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are pretty, excited or surprised that I answer the phone, because they're like, he's got people for that. I'm like, well, no, I handle every component that comes out of here and answer the emails the best I can. And I'm unfortunately not able to keep up with them all.
Yeah.
And then my wife, she's got an office in here too, so she helps manage. Well, she's chaos coordinator.
That's her official title.
Official title,
right.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's cool. Let's talk about your purpose a little bit. And again, that's the whole point of this podcast. We want to inspire people to live with purpose. If I were to ask you, what's the purpose for your life? Is there any way to like kind of manifest that? I mean, that's a big question. You articulate that? Like, and then I'll kind of give you a question, you know, purpose dot, you know, two. How has that changed since this accident? Is there a way that you can kind of articulate that?
Yeah, up to the point of my accident, you know, I was so focused on me as an athlete and kind of narrow-minded. Like everything I did was to better myself as an athlete. And since my injury happened, it kind of put the brakes on and made me think about the bigger picture. And what really kind of was that aha moment was the first time that I helped a veteran get back on his snowboard with the equipment we built. Mm. And the reaction that he gave me and the excitement when he was able to ride pretty dang good.
Yeah.
That reaction really turned a new page for me. Like, yeah, this is much more rewarding than winning a medal. This is making a positive influence on someone's life. And that's kind of been my goal, you know, with my career path and profession. You know, I've got three things that I really want to go after. One of them is making a positive influence on others. The other is to enjoy really what I'm doing every day.
Yeah.
And the third is trying to make it profitable.
Right.
And, if I can get all those three things rolling, you know, that's successful in my mind.
Do you feel that that some of the most rewarding part is getting the feedback from some of those people? Because you got to get some. I'm sure you get some great testimonies from people. Because I don't think they've ever probably tried a piece of equipment like what you're able to create for them. I mean, is that one of the better parts of your day? Is maybe to see a vet? Because you said a lot of your clients are actually veterans who have been injured in combat. You know, missing a limb, and now you're giving them the freedom to go and maybe do things that they haven't been able to do since their injury. That's got to be tremendously rewarding.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I've got so many awesome stories with people that, I'm not the only company that builds this type of equipment, but ours is definitely more versatile and higher performance, I'll say. Being able to open up that new door for somebody in an activity or for them to do an activity that they thought was no longer possible.
Yeah.
That's an amazing moment.
Mm, yeah. Here's a question for you. And I've asked this question to other people I've had on the show that have gone through traumatic injuries. Do you ever play what if? Do you ever play the what if card? Have you ever gone there? It sounds like you picked up the pieces pretty quickly, clearly, and just moved on. But do you go there in your mind occasionally? Did you go there right away? Do you still ever play that card in your head?
I try not to. I don't want to focus on what if at any level or thing in my life. I look at it. It is what it is.
Right.
We can't change the past. So the only thing we have a choice over is, you know, what we choose to do with what we have in front of us. Mm. Sometimes just to think about it, well, where would I be if that didn't happen? I know I would be building something cool. I've got two sides of me. One is a competitor and the other is, I love to design and engineer and build things. Mm. So I'd probably be in the shop doing something cool, but it would not be as rewarding as what I'm doing right now.
Yeah. I mean, I'm doing the math. You clearly had Lauren, your daughter, you know, after this accident.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that it's helped you mature as a human being? Maybe it's made you a better father. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but do you feel like, is there a way, I've asked this question also to folks that have had traumatic injuries, is in a strange, weird way, and I don't say yes because I put you up to it, but in a strange, weird way, are you almost kind of, I mean, can you dare go there in your mind and say that you're glad something like this happened because it made you reanalyze life a little bit? Can you go there in your mind and do you view this accident that way?
It's changed my perspective for sure. Okay. And the thing that it's changed for me is I really want to try and get the most out of every opportunity that comes up.
Yeah.
In the past, I was really narrow-minded and had a real narrow focal point. And right now, this has kind of opened things up.
Well,
pleasure. Hope you enjoyed this chat with Monster Mike Schultz. Like I said at the beginning of the podcast, a really, really cool guy. Pretty inspiring to hear how he didn't let this injury really slow him down one bit when it came to his career and his life. And I was really curious to hear how his perspective on purpose and life changed since losing his leg. He said when it came to purpose, it really didn't change at all. He was the same person before and after this injury. And I think that makes a lot of sense. The purpose for our lives as Christians really doesn't and shouldn't change regardless of our age, our job, our career, or even our physical health. Our purpose is to love, know, and glorify God, a foundational truth for all people. If you want to find out more information on Mike, go to MonsterMikeSchultz.com. He's also on Instagram and Facebook. That'll do it for this week's episode of Repurposed. Just a reminder, this show is based on a book by Ben Tages called Repurposed, The Untold Story of Retirement in America. If you want the first two chapters of that book totally free, just go to our website, TagesFinancial.com, and click on Heard Us on the Radio for your free gift just for listening here today. A big thanks to Faith Radio as well for helping us sponsor this program. If you missed any or all of this episode, visit MyFaithRadio.com to hear or download the podcast there. I'm Jared Sebesta. We'll see you next time on Repurposed. Hey, thanks for listening to the podcast of Repurposed. This media is only available because of listener support just like you. If you want to make a gift right now, you can go to the website, myfaithradio.com, and if you do that, we would appreciate that so much. Also, thanks in advance for sharing these podcasts with your friends online. It's an easy way to help spread the impact of Repurpose. And just one more thing, subscribe. You can find Repurpose on iTunes or your favorite podcast player.